Hello, this is David Duke. The Canadian government has now officially banned my book, Jewish Supremacism. Canada customs officials routinely seize and burn the book from Canadian booksellers who dare to order it. With unabashed chutzpah, the government then sends a bill for the cost of seizing and incinerating my book. Such is the state of freedom in the West in the early years of the 21st century. I frequently use the phrase heritage and freedom to focus on the most important issues confronting us. Heritage and freedom are mutually dependent. Our survival depends on freedom, for our heritage will face certain extinction unless we have the freedom first to know the truth and secondly to act upon it. As is readily apparent, the establishment nexus of government and media pursue policies that destroy our unique heritage and everything associated with it, our culture, our way of life, prosperity, traditions, values, and even our unique genetic inheritance. Unless there is a great awakening among our people, and unless those policies change, European mankind will be completely wiped off the face of the earth. The truth is, will be wiped off is not completely accurate. We are being wiped off the face of the planet right now, and it's happening at a frightening pace. The loss of our unique and beautiful people, a people responsible for most of the great and sublime achievements of mankind, is an immeasurable, tragic loss. The purveyors of this genocide are committing the greatest crime in the history of mankind. For if genocide, or destruction of a whole people, should be considered the worst possible crime and demand condemnation, then what should one call the genocide of European mankind? European Americans have long been a small minority of the Earth's population. But now in the United States and all over the world, we are also rapidly becoming minorities in our very own homelands. Two primary factors are responsible for this onrushing disaster: massive non-European immigration into white nations and negative birth rates among our own people. European American birth rates are so catastrophically low that our population will be decimated in only five short generations. The current birth rate of 1.25 means that for every 100 European Americans, after only five generations, there will be less than 10. Imagine a people that has existed for thousands of generations becoming decimated in only five generations. In a mirror image, non-Europeans are exploding in population in their own lands and pouring into European American nations. In addition to decimating European-American birth rates and massive non-European immigration into white homelands, the media vigorously promotes a self-loathing among our own people and racial outmarriage as well. All these factors lead inexorably to annihilation for our people. Yet the media, driven primarily in the world by its Jewish-dominated New York-Hollywood axis, acts as if this passing of our race is a cause for celebration. Somehow, European Americans are supposed to look forward to the benefits of so-called diversity, a diversity in which we will not even exist. There is no immigration or other demographic threat to almost completely African and Asian nations. On the contrary, their high birth rates are increasing their populations. It is only our own race that stands on the edge of extinction. Destruction of the European people is applauded by the very same media establishment that constantly tells us that the greatest crime in the history of the world was the alleged attempted genocide of Jews during the Second World War. Furthermore, the preponderance of media and political oligarchs in the West offer unqualified support for Israel as a, quote, Jewish state. They repeatedly state that Israel must be a state dedicated to the preservation of the Jewish people, religion, and culture. Yet, If European Americans desire their genetic, cultural, religious, and political freedom and survival, those same powers paint us to be racist and evil. These hypocritical positions should give any thinking person a damn good clue as to who really runs the media. In the controlled media, there's little discussion about this catastrophic demographic change for the European world. Revealingly, there has been far more discussion in the media about the demographic threat that the Palestinian birth rate poses to Israel than there is about the demographic crisis facing America and Europe. Regarding intermarriage, a quick Google internet search on the word intermarriage elicits hundreds of thousands of articles citing the danger of intermarriage to the Jewish people. Only a very small percentage of articles warn about the dangers of intermarriage to European mankind. What is it about Jews that makes them more worthy of preservation? Should Europeans not be accorded the same human right to survive? When George Bush spoke at Bob Jones University during his last presidential campaign, the media excoriated him and forced him to apologize for speaking at a university that frowns on interracial and interreligious marriage. Yet within days after his appearance at Bob Jones, Bush spoke to two major Jewish organizations that have active programs intended to prevent intermarriage of Jews with Gentiles. There was not a peep of protest about those appearances. Again, the uninitiated are given another clear sign as to who runs the media in America. While the possible demise of Jewish people is looked upon as the most evil of crimes, the ongoing destruction of the white race is hardly even mentioned. And when it is discussed, the media tells us that it is something to which we should eagerly look forward. This attitude is typified by President Clinton's June 13, 1998 speech that he made at Portland State University. In the speech, he praised the new diversity in America, and he spoke optimistically of the time when European Americans will become the American minority. Here's what he said, and I quote, "But now we are being tested again by a new wave of immigration larger than any in a century, far more diverse than any in our history. Each year, nearly 1 million people come legally to America. Today, nearly 1 in 10 people in America was born in another country. 1 in 5 school children are from immigrant families. Today, largely because of immigration, there is no majority race in Hawaii or Houston or New York City. Within 5 years, there will be no majority race in our largest state, California. In little more than 50 years, there will be no majority race in the United States." Applause. No other nation in history has gone through demographic change of this magnitude in such short a time. Unquote. My friends, how propagandized and sick our people have become. In Portland, Oregon, the overwhelmingly white audience applauded the demise of their own people. Could one imagine African Americans in Atlanta applauding a remark that African Americans there would soon be a minority? Could one imagine Jews in Israel applauding the announcement that Jews would soon be a minority in Israel? Do Palestinians celebrate their new minority status in what was once their own Palestine? President Clinton was somewhat wrong, though, about the historical demographic changes in history. Many societies have gone through dramatic demographic change in relatively short periods. Perhaps he left out that fact because he did not want to note that those nations, traditional peoples, and cultures did not survive. A good example is Rome's destruction of its rival Carthage in 146 BC. Most of the Carthaginians were physically exterminated. Their cities were burnt, their fields salted, and the few remaining survivors sold into slavery and dispersed across the world. The decimated people who inherited this once great kingdom could never raise Carthage again, and in fact it virtually ceased to exist. History is a long story of the powerful impact of demographic change. Of course, a classic example is the migration of Europeans to the Americas. The Indians were decimated by many factors, including military defeat and disease. Those left fell under oppression and the complete domination of the occupying race. Indians heroically resisted this threat to their way of life, to their freedom to live as they've always lived, and to the real threat to their very existence posed by immigration. All healthy peoples resist their own destruction. Ironically, many of the liberals who masochistically look forward to the demise of the white race at the same time greatly honor and revere the Indians and all peoples of the world who resist European colonialism. By that inconsistency, by that hypocrisy, they expose their own hateful anti-white racism. Contrary to their concern toward other peoples, they don't even accord those of European descent even the fundamental right of survival. Another good example of the devastating power of immigration is the rapidly increasing dispossession of the Palestinian people by a massive Jewish immigration invasion. When their numbers became great enough in the early days of Israel, the Zionists used force and terror to dispossess the people. Palestinians in Israel, who owned 95% of the land in 1945, now own less than 5%. And in 1967, Israel expanded her borders again and put about 1.5 million people under a terribly oppressive military occupation. And truly today, the West Bank and Gaza are really nothing more than huge concentration camps. Yet the owners of the media still talk about valiant, freedom-loving little Israel, the only, quote, democracy in the Middle East. Tell that to those 1.5 million people who have no vote and no control over their lives. And George Bush and John Cohen give bear hugs to Jewish terrorists such as Ariel Sharon, the butcher of Beirut, and refer to him as a man of peace. Of course, there's not even a peep of protest in the controlled media about American leaders cozying up to a man who should be on trial for war crimes. Actually, although the audience in Portland applauded Clinton's remark about the white race soon becoming a minority, most of our people are still relatively healthy, and they realize the disaster that looms for themselves and their children if we become a minority both in our communities and respective nations. How can one otherwise explain white flight in our major cities, or the massive white migration to the Pacific Northwest and other European American parts of the United States and the world? Every opinion poll conducted in all the white nations shows an overwhelming percentage of our people oppose massive third world immigration. Most polls in the United States, Canada, and Britain show an incredibly high 80% of European Americans wanting to end the illegal immigration and to sharply curtail legal immigration. The same can be said in France, Germany, Italy, Spain, Scandinavia, Australia, and in every traditionally European land. Ireland, for instance, recently voted to rescind automatic citizen rights for those 9 Irish who happen to be born on Irish soil. In fact, a major Irish newspaper and national radio program interviewed me on this subject very recently. In spite of overwhelming popular opposition, the government of every white nation has destructive policies resulting in 1, massive immigration of non-Europeans, 2, inadequate enforcement of existing immigration laws, and 3, economic and social structures and pressures causing lower birth rates among Europeans. The demographic transformation of European American nations is not an inevitable event, such as a ripe apple falling from a tree. It is a contrived and unnatural state of affairs, for all people naturally wish to preserve themselves. Immigration is a result of our people's will being purposefully subverted. The best definition of tyranny is simply making people do what they don't want to do. These tyrants enforce policies against our will, policies that will utterly destroy our heritage. There are many reasons why governments are not acting in defense of our most basic interests. Some Western governments are controlled by certain economic, political, and ethnic factions, that have an agenda contrary to the great majority of their people. The most common term describing these factors is, quote, special interest groups, unquote. The most powerful special interest group in the Western world is that supporting the agenda of Jewish supremacism. For instance, any outsider on Capitol Hill can tell you that the strongest lobby in Washington, D.C. is the Zionist lobby. Imagine, the strongest lobby in the United States government is not for some domestic concern, but for foreign power. Their power can be seen in the media and government orchestration of America's war against Iraq. It can be seen in the fact that although Israeli crimes against Palestinians are horrendous and obvious, that Israel gets pretty much a free pass from the press. It can be seen in the power of this little country holding so much sway over America's military machine, the most powerful on earth. Senator Fulbright put it very bluntly when he said, quote, Israel controls the U.S. Senate, unquote. Not only have Jewish supremacists such as Pearl and Wolfowitz been the architects of the anti-American Iraq war, a war that will damage and endanger our people for generations to come, but they've also been the most powerful force behind opening Western borders. Please take the opportunity to read my chapter called Jewish-Led Invasion and Jewish Supremacism, where I go into this in detail. They have been the prime movers of destructive movements favoring radical feminism, increasing abortion, homosexuality, and the zero population growth movement, all of which have helped lower European-American birth rates. The Jewish supremacist-dominated media, of course, has incessantly promoted all these movements, as well as promoted self-hatred and intermarriage among our own people. The worldwide entertainment and news media are overwhelmingly dominated by a people who have a genocidal agenda against our heritage. Now, I know that sounds pretty extreme, does it not, for me to use the term genocidal? Yet that is precisely what their agenda is. They support policies that result in the genocide or destruction of the genes of our people. These policies will cause our people to lose control in our own nations, make our children minorities in our own nations, and eventually cause them to be subsumed by the non-Europeans who will replace them. Yet, this is the same media that promotes Jewish supremacy in Palestine and elsewhere. There is, however, a roadblock in the way of the genocidists. In spite of the 24-hour-a-day propaganda informing us of the great benefits of immigration, the great majority of our people around the world oppose it. The potential exists for a great popular uprising against the establishment on behalf of our survival. So how do they prevent that political upheaval? There are two things that are critical to their maintaining their control over us and the continuation of these genocidal policies. They must prevent our people from realizing that the mass media has been hijacked by non-European Jewish supremacists and their servants. And two, they must keep our people from clearly understanding the demographic crisis that our people actually face. To accomplish these two objectives, they attempt to control as much speech and opinion as possible and to repress dissent by defaming those who dare to resist, and failing that, by outright suppression and persecution. They begin by labeling as haters any Europeans who love their own heritage and seek to preserve it. Racism is a term strikingly similar to the Inquisition's use of the word heresy. Just label someone a racist or hater, and that ends discussion. In a number of countries, they have actually made it a criminal offense for European Americans to object to our ongoing genocide, to suggest that massive non-European immigration is a threat to our survival, is now punishable as a hate crime. And of course, they've made it a criminal offense to simply expose Jewish supremacism. Such a hate crime is punishable by imprisonment in many European American nations. Now, I know that some people who are reading this don't really believe it when I say that thousands of Europeans are in prison for thought and speech crimes. After all, we grew up in a media climate that says free speech is good, suppression of speech is bad, free expression is good, book burning or banning is evil. Most people believe that suppression of intellectual thought is the kind of thing that existed only under totalitarianism. Yet for all of that, there are thousands of men and women in jail in dozens of Western countries for daring to exercise their intellectual freedom on the race and Jewish issue. Yes, thousands. In places such as the UK, France, Germany, Switzerland, Canada, expressing such sentiments as I do in the David Duke Report is punishable by imprisonment. My good friend, the fantastic scholar Jürgen Graf, is in exile because he faces a 2-year prison sentence in Switzerland simply for doing intellectual research and writing on the historically controversial area of the Holocaust story. In America, we have a very clear Bill of Rights in the U.S. Constitution that unequivocally defends freedom of speech. Yet, that has not stopped lawmakers at the behest of Jewish supremacist groups such as the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, ADL, and the American Jewish Congress, AJC, from passing legislation that increases penalties for crimes if the offending person uttered the wrong speech or even had the wrong thoughts at the time of the crime. Orwell predicted this quite well when he talked about thought crimes. The thought criminal is proven to have broken the law by possession of books or literature deemed to be hate literature. This may sound way out to many of you hearing this, but this is happening. In America, the forces in power use other means rather than direct speech laws to suppress their dissidents. A perfect example is shown in the case of chess champion Bobby Fischer. Fischer had the temerity to go and play a chess match in Yugoslavia when the United Nations had sanctions against that country. Now, the U.S. government wants to put Bobby Fischer in jail for 10 years for that minuscule offense. But you want to know his real crime? The real crime that Bobby Fischer is being prosecuted for is the fact that he said some very offensive things about the 9/11 tragedy. And even more importantly, he has roundly condemned the Jewish supremacist state of Israel and the Jewish supremacy over much of the United States policy and much world policy. Interestingly, it does Mr. Fischer no good that he may be a Jew himself, as it is claimed his mother was Jewish. Of course, Jews also claim that Jesus Christ was of Jewish origin, but that didn't do him much good either. Once you dare to challenge their evil power, they are not shy about using that power against you. I'm reminded of the case of Democratic House Leader James Moran of Virginia, who casually remarked at a town hall meeting that the Jewish community had the power to prevent the Iraq war, and that he hoped that they would. At the same time that the Zionists announced how terribly wrong Representative Moran was about Jewish power, they stripped him of his leadership position in the House of Representatives. It matters not how their suppression of free speech goes against every principle of freedom. How interesting when Bush and Blair proclaim that one of the main justifications for going to war against Iraq was to give the Iraqis freedom. Somehow, freedom is what we were supposed to have in the Western nations, but supposedly did not exist in Saddam Hussein's Iraq. But what exactly is this freedom we were supposed to be giving them? I imagine that our rulers are alluding to freedom of speech and conscience, the freedom to read and discuss any opinion, thought, principle, or idea. Other than the ubiquitous pictures of the ovens at Auschwitz, The most common and potent image used to discredit Nazi Germany is the burning of books. Those nasty old Nazis, they dared to burn books, unquote. How much more evil can you get? The fact is that book burning is not a thing of the past, but continues to this very present. It can be illustrated in the actions of America's neighbor to the north, Canada, which falls mightily under Jewish media and government influence. Recently, the ADL was successful in censoring the Al Jazeera television network in Canada. One of the reasons cited against Al Jazeera was that the network had the chutzpah to invite David Duke on one of their primetime programs a year and a half ago. Canadian columnist Antonia Zerbisius, writing in the Toronto Star on Tuesday, July 20, 2004, wrote the following. Who will protect us from Fox? Censoring Al Jazeera is a double standard. Now that its critics have ensured that Al Jazeera will never get on Canada's digital dial uncensored, will they now fight to protect us from Fox News? Recall that last week, the federal broadcast regulator gave a half-assed go-ahead to the Arabic language news channel, requiring that distributors who added to their offerings keep it free of, quote, abusive content. That decision, complete with onerous guilty until proven innocent restrictions, was reached after lobbying by both the Canadian Jewish Congress and the Mene Brit Canada, who naturally were concerned about anti-Jewish hate speech. Yesterday in the Post, Ed Morgan, national president of the Canadian Jewish Congress, published an op-ed piece praising the Canadian limitations in Al Jazeera, referring to how it airs, quote, vile material. Morgan noted that the channel had, along with hosting American and Israeli leaders, interviewed Ku Klux Klan chief David Duke in 2002. As a side note here, they never can get it straight. They don't even put former anymore. You know, this is, you know, again, this kind of shows the media control in this society. The Post made a big deal of that by highlighting the bit in boldface and larger type. But Fox News had Duke on as well, also in 2002, discussing, and this is from Duke's own website where you can buy a video of the interview for $25, the Israeli involvement in the September 11 terrorist attacks. I was interviewed on Fox a couple months before the Iraq War by a hostile interviewer who did her best to try to prevent me from even speaking a complete sentence. The ADL is afraid of networks such as Al Jazeera daring to let all different points of view have a fair and open forum. They cannot stand true freedom of speech. Freedom of speech on these issues simply means that they lose the battle for public opinion. The Jewish supremacists of the ADL demand that the vast majority of the media represent only their viewpoint. They seek to ruthlessly suppress any and all opposition. Even if their opposition only has less than 1% of media influence, they are compelled to squelch it. It is not enough for them to dominate the 99% of the rest of media. They want a complete blackout of every contrary opinion. Of course, their fear of free speech reveals how much they fear the evidence that we can produce that exposes their own hypocrisy. Now, concerning my book, under the influence of the ADL, the Canadian government has now officially outlawed my two books. The government now seizes and burns my Awakening and Jewish Supremacism. In fact, the Canadian government, in addition to seizing and destroying my books, will send a bill for the destruction to the Canadian book companies who dare to object to their books being burned. It's reminiscent of the Red Chinese policy of sending a bill for the executioner's bullets to the families of the executed. In use of language that goes well beyond Orwellian newspeak, the government classifies my books as, quote, hate propaganda. But their definition of hate propaganda is so nebulous that most books in Canada could easily be banned under this law. Let me quote from the official form sent by the Canadian government to a Canadian citizen who had ordered my book. They classify my book as hate propaganda because it criticizes an identifiable group. To be hate propaganda in Canada, all a book has to do is to criticize a, quote, identifiable group for serious economic, social problems or allege that it manipulates media, trade, finance, politics, government to the detriment of society, or that it is inferior and superior, or that it weakens or threatens society. Any one of these categories classifies a book as hate propaganda. Big Brother would be proud of such an all-encompassing definition. All discourse, all discussion criticizes in some way identifiable groups, whether they are communists or capitalists, Nazis or libertarians, Europeans or Native Americans, Republicans or Democrats, free traders or protectionists, Christians or Muslims, neocons or liberals, Jews or evangelical Christians, Israelis or jihadists. In short, an identifiable group is any of these tens of thousands of identifiable groups that exist in society, and if you write a word of criticism about them, your book can now be burned. By this insane definition, if someone blames Republicans or Democrats, an identifiable group, for serious economic and social problems, he's guilty of, quote, hate propaganda. If a writer complains of historical European mistreatment of Native American Indians, he's guilty of hate propaganda. If he blames Europeans for serious economic or social problems of Indians, he is guilty of hate propaganda. But don't hold your breath for any of thousands of such books to now be banned. If one writes of German guilt for war crimes, that book must also be banned and burned. But none have been burned so far. As those of you who have read my books know, although I defend the right of all groups to preserve their heritage, including my own group, I do not claim that any group is inferior or superior, or do I support the oppression of anyone. In fact, I oppose the racial supremacism and oppression of Zionism. Because I expose Jewish racial supremacism and racial hatred with quotes from their own writings, my book, Jewish Supremacism, is now called hate propaganda. The point is that the laws burning books in Canada are purposefully so nebulous that those who have real power can use them to protect Zionism and Israel from criticism. That is the main reason for the law. It is similar to laws the Inquisition had against heresy or blasphemy. What are those things really, except what the inquisitors say that they are? What is hate propaganda? It's whatever the Jewish censors say that it is. The American Library Association has a number of formal positions on freedom of speech and intellectual freedom. You can find them on the ALA.org website. Every person who loves freedom certainly agrees with its stated principles. Let me share some of them with you, and I quote. This is from the American Library Association. We believe that free communication is essential to the preservation of a free society and creative culture. Intellectual freedom is the right of every individual to both seek and receive information from all points of view without restriction. It provides for free access of all expressions of ideas through which any and all sides of a question, cause, or movement may be explored. The freedom to read is essential to our democracy. It is continuously under attack. Those actions apparently arise from a view that our national tradition of free expression is no longer valid, that censorship and suppression are needed to avoid the subversion of politics and the corruption of morals. Those are the words of the American Library Association, and truer words have not been spoken. Every tyranny in the world attempts to suppress the free speech of its dissidents. What is happening in the West is testimony that we are occupied by an alien power who rules over us and who works against our most basic interests. The American Library Association also dusted off an old quote by the German writer Heine to show the evil of book burning. They quote from his play Almanzer in 1821, where he says, quote, where they burn books, they will end and burning human beings." Unquote. Hein wrote those words in 1821, and they're absolutely applicable today to the European people themselves. Because we are not free, we face annihilation. Another historical voice who was in Great Britain, Charles Bradlaugh, put it this way, and I quote, "Without free speech, no search for truth is possible. No discovery of truth is useful. Better a thousandfold abuse of free speech than denial of free speech. The abuse dies in a day, but the denial slays the life of the people and entombs the hope of the race." Even the father of our country, George Washington, said it so very well. "If freedom of speech is taken away, then dumb and silent we may be led like sheep to the slaughter." We are indeed being led like sheep to the slaughter. Only when we break the alien power over us can we both be free and survive. We will be led like sheep to the slaughter, or we will stand up as brave and free men for our heritage and freedom. The great American John Adams called upon this courage in our people in 1756. He wrote, "It should be your care, therefore, and mine, to elevate the minds of our children and exalt their courage. If we suffer their minds to grovel and creep in infancy, they will grovel all of their lives." That's from John Adams, 1756. Such a call is even more needed in 2004 than it was then. Indeed, we must elevate the minds of our children, exalt their courage. We must not grovel. We must defend our sacred heritage and our precious freedom. To this end, I dedicate my life, and I urge all reading these words to do likewise. There is no more important issue on earth. I remain yours for our heritage and freedom. This has been David Duke, and these are a few of my latest thoughts.